And I forget, do I start or do you start?
I don't, are we not going to vamp beforehand? Are we just getting right into it?
Oh, no, we can absolutely vamp. My brain was just like, oh, click over into notes. Wait, I don't know which one of us is doing the intro or outro.
I think, I'm pretty sure I started last time, so you can start this time.
Sounds good.
Also, I'm trying to think, do I have anything worth vamping about? I don't know. My mom bought, remember my can opener broke?
Yes. Did your mom buy you an electric can opener?
No, she bought me an acoustic can opener, but she still bought me a can opener, so now I don't have to buy one for myself.
Aw, nice.
And I have noticed I have a tendency to say acoustic instead of...
Mechanical?
Mechanical, or...
Manual?
Not manual. I mean, yes, that is also true, but it starts with A, but it also means something where it's not electronic.
Analog.
Analog, correct. I quite often use analog and acoustic interchangeably.
I think that's fair. I get to go do my taxes tomorrow, by which I mean I am going to be bringing my tax documents to the free AARP tax preparer.
Nice. I just sent my stuff to my dad, and I'll probably not get as good a return this year because Saskatchewan had this thing. I can't remember if Saskatchewan or just Regina, but there was this thing where it's like you will get extra money back on your tax return if you don't leave the province for the next 6 years after. Oh, yeah, because it was like if you get a university degree... And then you keep that degree in province for, like, the next 6 years, then we'll give you extra money on your tax return.
Oh. Huh.
And it was more about, like, retention in the province and keeping the skills in the province so we can take advantage of them instead of, you know, like, getting a computer science degree at the U of R, University of Regina, and then taking that thing to Alberta or something like that. Like, no, we want to keep all this talent in-house. But it's really easy to take advantage of that when, like, you're the English major with the English degree, and you're probably not going anywhere. You're probably staying in province anyways and just kind of languishing. But now I'm pretty sure time-wise it's at the point where even the tax people are like, oh, you're still here? Mm-hmm. You can go.
I wish we did things like that, but I would not qualify.
I have no idea if Saskatchewan is the cheapest province to live in or not, but I'm pretty confident that, like, any of the provinces I would be interested in moving to for whether career or just social reasons are more expensive, definitely.
Yeah.
And also I sure as shit don't want to live in Alberta.
Yeah.
The Texas of Canada? No, thank you.
Oh my god. Terrifying to think of.
Yeah. No, I'll stay in Saskatchewan. It's nature's perfect shape, a rectangle.
I thought that was a triangle.
What? Is this a reference I'm not catching?
It is a reference, but I can't tell you where I heard it from.
Okay, I think that is just, like, a factual thing, that, like, the strongest shape is a triangle, and that's why you use it in a lot of architecture. But the joke about Saskatchewan being nature's perfect shape is a gag from Corner Gas, where they had the, at the time, Premier Lorne Calver, who's also a family friend, humble brag, but Lorne Calver was talking about how great Saskatchewan was, in just, like, a random cutaway gag, like a Family Guy-style cutaway gag, where someone mentions how Saskatchewan isn't all that bad, that it cuts to Lorne, and he holds up a picture of Saskatchewan saying...
And we're a rectangle, nature's most perfect shape.
My state is also a rectangle. Which one?
Okay, but it's not that special in America. Half of them are rectangles.
That's true, and listeners don't get to know which rectangle I live in. Tanner and Emily both know because they've both gotten Christmas cards from me. But the rest of you, you're on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I was going to make another joke about the rectangles, but it was going to be a bummer joke, so I'm not going to make it.
Fair. A wise decision.
Yeah.
Given that we might be having some bummer discussions.
Yeah, but at least they're bummers in a different way, probably, maybe. I don't know. Do you want to talk about dance? You can't see it, but I'm dancing right now.
Just go ahead and grab a chair and listen now. As we riff the show, Tanner and Christina gonna figure out why we love this show. Better grab your golden stars and slushies, cause you're listening to Loser Like Me. Loser Like Me.
Everybody, and welcome to Loser Like Me. This is a Glee recap and review podcast where we are currently talking about The Glee Project Season 2. My name is Christina, and I'm kind of a coffeehouse performer. I remembered that we used to say funny lines for the bit.
That's true, and we still do. I just forgot to have one prepared.
It's okay.
And I'm Tanner, and my mom doesn't know it, but I've kissed many boys.
There you go.
She does actually know it.
Congratulations. But today, we are here to talk about episode 2 of season 2, which is Danceability
2!
It's almost like they've done this show before.
Yeah, it's almost like they're reusing existing concepts for episodes so they have less to do. Which, whomst among us, honestly.
Exactly.
I can't razz them for that when I do that myself.
Also, here's what you miss on the Glee project. Everyone's so diverse. There are girls in all shapes and sizes. One of them's on wheels. There's an Asian guy with red hair. And a lesbian who looks like Justin Bieber. And this guy likes math.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking up some stuff on TV tropes last night for research for both this episode and the next one. And they pointed out that you could make a very good Power Rangers team out of these contestants, because we have, like, almost everything covered. We've got people of color. We've got people of multiple gender identities. We got people of different body shapes. We got people with disabilities. And we have a white guy. We even have two white guys. Or three white guys.
You know what the show needs? Another straight white man.
Yeah, I mean, Eileen would make a great Power Ranger. Unfortunately, she never would have had a chance while Saban was running things, because he is racist.
Yes.
Timing, when? When did season 2 come out? It was 2012?
It was like 2011, 2012. I don't remember the exact air date off the top of my head, but let me look it up. Let's see who looks it up faster.
Yeah, I'm just checking, because I'm checking which Power Ranger seasons it matches up with. And if Michael stuck to acting, I feel like he could have ended up playing Riley on Dino Charge if he wanted to.
I think he could have.
He has a similar temperament.
Yeah, I don't know. I think wait, did you say Michael?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. I think Michael is a little bit less emo than Michael Tabor was when he was playing Riley.
I don't think he was emo, necessarily.
I'm quoting that from one of his Instagram stories from way back, where he was like, oh my god, I was so emo over footage of Dino Charge.
Oh, I think, okay, yeah, because Riley, the character, was not emo at all. Mm-hmm. He was a preppy nerd.
Yes, a closeted preppy nerd.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, previously on the Glee Project, Maxfield left by Maxfield. They didn't really give him a chance to do anything, because he's country, and that's all they ever said about him.
It's true. Though, to be fair, he probably wouldn't have gone that far anyway. Let's just be real.
Yeah. Which is not to say that he doesn't deserve to succeed, because he does.
Right.
He just, also, I don't think they would have known what to do with him.
So, sometimes, realistically, when a person goes, it was actually their time to go. Because they were not, they were not built for the show, or the show was not built for them.
Yes, that is true. But this week everyone hangs out, and they're like, wow, what's the theme gonna be? And the answer is, Danceability. And everyone is just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's dance. We do actually, in this season, we see more of the discussions on divvying up the lines, because this is where the show decides to, like, highlight a drama, I guess. And yeah. They're like, it's like Mario wants the part that Allie wanted, because she wants to do the round and round and round part, and he wants to do something vocally interesting. And he thought that Allie doing that would be cliche. And then Allie declares that Mario was rubbing people the wrong way. But that's all we're going to get in this episode of that.
Yeah. And, like, I do appreciate that, like, for one thing, I don't remember if I said this in the first episode or not, but this time they're doing We Got the Beat by the Go-Go's. And this time they specifically gave Mario his lyrics in Braille, which is ADA compliant.
Yes, and they always do that throughout his time on the show. It's just, I think this is the only episode where they state out loud, by the way, here's your lyrics, they are in Braille.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, when he is in the bottom two, he, like, the callback list also has Braille written on it, or embedded in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, they are being accessible for him.
Yes, they are. And they have, like, all the contestants have a talk about, like, solos and everything. Taryn points out how everyone is talking over each other, nothing's getting done. And they then cut to her calling home and talking to her mom. And then the episode just puts in a slate that says, like, Taryn went home, like, due to, I don't know, family problems.
Well, no, they didn't. Okay, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
They don't even say why turn left beyond, this was such a hard thing for her to go through, and she couldn't do it, so she decided to leave. And the reality of it is that,
yeah,
on top of the homesickness, which was kind of like her thing that they brought in, then she later found out that, like, several members of her family had passed away in quick succession, and she wasn't able to participate in the project more because of the trauma.
Yeah, and, like, on the one hand, I'm glad that they didn't necessarily say that on, like, you know, national television.
But they could have at least said some family stuff happened and she felt she had to leave.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit more context.
The way Robert tells it to the contestants, he comes like, hey guys, Taryn had to leave because she was homesick. And then that leads to some people saying, wow, that sucks, but, like, I can't believe she just gave up on this huge opportunity. And yeah. I can't blame them for saying that, because that's what they were told. And they wouldn't find out that, like, she had gone through a horrible family upheaval until after they were released from the Glee Project.
Yeah. And, like, at the same time, too, it's like, I understand, like, sometimes you get a really great opportunity, and even if it's really great, you know that it's not the best for you at that point in time, and you have to step away from it. And that takes a lot of strength to do. And I think that Taryn absolutely made the right choice.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of strength either way, whether you're saying, all this has happened, I can't do this anymore, or all this has happened, but I can't give up on this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, hearts go out to Taryn for all of that happening.
Yeah, and, like, after Robert tells everyone that Taryn had to go home, and, you know, you gotta divvy up her lines now, Michael is like, oh, I hope Taryn's okay. I thought we were friends and I wanted to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good for you, Michael.
Whereas, meanwhile, Allie's the one who gets the talking head, where she's like, I can't believe she would give up on this opportunity. And, again, I don't fault her for that, because as far as she knows, that's what happened. But also, it's weird that between this and her also having the talking head about Mario rubbing people the wrong way, it's almost like they started giving Allie the, not the villain edit, but, like, she's the one who's gonna do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And I will say, clearly the person who's editing and, like, producing the show, they know how to do a reality show, for better or for worse. Because I remember last season on the Glee Project, how, like, it wasn't following proper reality show conventions, which was kind of good because there wasn't, like, the artificial drama, but also weird because it's, like, they'd almost set up the plot lines in the editing and then just completely fail to follow through on them.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, congratulations, Glee Project Season 2. You're edited by someone who knows what's up.
Trust me, I will be talking about the editing later and perhaps in the next episode as well.
So. Yeah. Anyways, let's go to the homework people.
Yeah.
And they're like, ooh, what if it's Heather because she dances? But no, it's Sam.
Yeah, it's Samuel Larson. Someone who is not particularly known for his incredible dance skills.
But he won Danceability last time, and he got to scat.
He did. And he got to steal Hannah's thing, which was scatting.
He does skadoosh again.
And it's like, you have to imagine that, like, I would have loved to have known what the contestants thought about him using skadoosh when, like, at least Charlie and, like, well, definitely Charlie, but probably everyone else has watched the Glee Project Season 1, and they know that he stole it.
There is no commentary on this, but I would not be shocked if, like, after Charlie got out of the Glee Project, one of the first things he did, because of, like, he's on the spectrum, this is where his focus lies, I would do the same thing. But as soon as he has access to phone, he would contact Hannah and be like, Hannah, you're not gonna believe this, but Joe is still using skadoosh.
Yeah.
Whereas Hannah, who is probably over it at this point, would just be like, really? Well, anyways.
Yeah.
By the way, who are you?
Yeah. And so they do the homework dance. They do some of the choreography from the show.
There's dancing. I barely paid attention to the dancing. I was more focused on the singing because it sounded like every single person for their solo decided, this is where I'm going to do an elaborate vocal run.
Yes. I noted that they stuck Mario in the back, not doing a lot of footwork. Charlie gets to do a body roll, and Tony Award winner Allie Stroker gets to do a Amber Riley wail on Round and Around and Around.
The big dance moment I did notice was Eileen Because there's a lyric where it's like, they fall down or get up or something like that, and she like mimes a fall off one of the bleachers.
Uh-huh.
And that was pretty good, because like, she went deep into that thing. She could have actually fallen, and she pulled herself back.
Good, yeah. But yeah, and so Samuel ends up picking Abraham to be the winner for this round, which was nice because Abraham also was kind of like helping lead some of the choreography when they were practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then Robert reveals that the group number for this time is Party Rock Anthem, which is a song not especially known for its vocal depth.
Yeah, you don't so much sing it as experience it.
You yell it.
I mean, no, you don't really yell it either. You just kind of say it.
Yeah.
Because they're not to disrespect LMFAO, but they aren't exactly rappers. They aren't known for their flow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure all of the, like, the harmonies on Party Rock Anthem are from the guest artists.
Yeah. Also, the concept for the music video this week is going to be a high school house party at Abraham's house. And I just wrote down here that every concept for the music videos is just Meryl Streep and Devil Wears Prada voice.
Groundbreaking.
So original. What a creative concept, Eric White.
I mean, to Eric's credit, he does have to come up with fairly simple concepts for the music video so that everyone does have a chance to be highlighted. To his discredit, I've already watched the next episode. We've both already watched the next episode. Yeah. 4 out of 3 of the music videos I've seen for this season do not actually adequately highlight people's solos.
Yes.
Or the concept of the music video.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not as bad this week as it is next week, but. Yeah. Anyways. But yeah, it's going to be a dance part. There's a party and it's high school and there's dancing and kissing and spin the bottle. And Eileen's like, oh, spin the bottle.
Yeah.
Because I say this with love, but I don't know if Eileen chose this role or it was assigned to her in editing. But for the first like half of the show, Eileen is like, I'm here to be the slut. Affectionate. And I'm like, I don't know whether this was your decision, but honestly, go for it.
Yeah.
She's owning it either way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very possible that producer, like, came to her and was like, you gotta play up how, like, you're, like, the sexy girl. The cool, badass, sexy Turkish Muslim girl. And I don't know, like, if that was the case, clearly Eileen was like, okay, well, if this is what they want from me, I'm going to give 110%.
Yeah, good for her.
God damn it, Ryan Murphy, I could be the best slut you've ever seen. And again, Eileen, if for some reason you're listening to this, I'm saying this with love.
Yeah. We are on your side. Truthfully, we're on the side of everyone except for Ryan Murphy and Leah Michelle.
Yes, and probably Blake Jenner.
And Eric White.
Yeah, oh.
Mostly.
Yeah, and Nikki Anders.
Yes, and Robert Ulrich is on thin ice.
Yeah, he's... he waffles. Zach, you're usually fine, honestly.
Yeah.
Zach, I'm honestly putting in the same thing as the contestants, where it's like, if you say anything untoward, I'm gonna side-eye you, but it was probably editing's fault.
Yeah. But speaking of Zach,
it's time for choreography. This is going to be a choreography-heavy music video.
Yeah, and he starts off by asking them to disown the time-honored traditions of doing the sprinkler and the hair whip.
Or the boob pop.
Yeah, because the point is, like, he wants them to, like, do moves that are original and not necessarily, you know, tried and true, everyone would recognize it from their cousin's wedding kind of a thing. But they do something fun, which is, in order to get everyone to, like, open up about their own individual dance moves, they end up doing, like, a dance circle, and everyone, you know, goes to the center and does something fun while they get cheered on by the others. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And in, like, Talking Heads, Danny mentions that they don't have formal dance training, which is, you know, fair. And Tyler is like, I am still getting used to my body. Did you forget that I'm trans this episode?
I mean, no, they'll never forget Tyler's trans, because, not to peel back the curtain, but I'm pretty sure they were all very aware that Tyler was not ready to be on the show, and they only kept them around because they could say, ooh, we've got the trans guy. Look at us.
That would not surprise me.
And I don't know. I don't know if I want to delve really deep into Tyler this week or next week or the week after, because they're all kind of, like, episodes that highlight Tyler's inherent awkwardness. Actually, yeah, let's delve into it this week, just so we have, like, a context for it, because...
Yeah, I have a lot less information than you do, so go ahead.
I don't have that much more information. Honestly, part of this is just personal experience stuff of my NB-ness, But I remember reading an interview that Tyler did where they were talking about when they were initially transitioning and how, like, when they first, like, they were, had started presenting masks, so they had shorter hair and were, like, wearing guy clothes, quote unquote, which was just jeans, hoodie, whatever, hide the body, baggy shit. We love that shit. But they went to the therapist to start discussing, like, the next steps and hormone therapy and stuff. And the therapist, one of the things the therapist said was, like, if you, people are going to take you seriously as a man, you will have to stop paying your nails and you can't have purple shoelaces because those are girl things. And it's like, me and Christina and presumably the listeners, we know better than that to assign gender to like colors and shit like that.
Yes.
But this was back in 2011, probably.
Yes.
And also like Tyler, like I'm pretty sure this interview, it was after the Glee project. I'm pretty sure it was like after Tyler was starting to use they, them pronouns or like have a general non-binary, like exploring beyond that kind of situation. And they were talking about how that really messed them up and they'd like kind of tried to skew hyper-masculine, but that never felt right to them either. And I, my personal thing of like coming to realize and accept my, me being agender was the fact that I never felt comfortable in the skin when I was saying that I was a man.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like especially one aspect of toxic masculinity is you hyper-analyze your stuff to make sure you're being a guy enough. Whether it's the way you carry yourself, the way you walk, the way you talk, all your actions, etc., etc. And not even in, like, a toxic way of being, like, taking up space and being domineering and, like, arrogant and stuff like that, which is, like, the stereotypical masculine stuff. But just toxic in the fact that, like, it kind of infests you and you get stuck in your own head thinking, am I doing the boy thing right?
The hyper-analysis of, are you performing the gender sufficiently?
Right, exactly. And I, it was kind of freeing, but I realized I don't have to be like a guy to be, to although be really, there have been times where I prefer my gender if what if a dude was a guy, but I feel real hinky if someone says you're a man. But I feel like, just like, you think about that kind of headspace that Tyler was probably in for these next three episodes, which deal a lot about physicality and presence in a scene, and Tyler is probably, like, overthinking and hyper-analyzing of, like, well, I need to dance, but I have to make sure it's not a girly dance. And yeah, that's because, like, one of the things they read them for is, like, not being able to break free, like cut loose and stuff. And Tyler does say, like, yeah, I'm being too self-conscious to stop being self-conscious or something along those lines. And, like, I can see exactly what's going on inside their head where it's, like, I need to show my emotions so that they like me, but if I show too much emotion, that's not manly enough. And if I'm not manly enough, then I'm not a man, which means everything is a lie!
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's rough, and it's one of the few things I don't hold up against the Glee Project production, because I do feel like ultimately they, but aside from the fact that Tyler was clearly just the diversity contestant that they kept around because they wanted to say that they tried, even though Tyler clearly was not ready. Like, it may have been nicer to for Tyler not to get onto the show to begin with, because they are clearly not ready, not at the point in their body and their life where they are ready to, like, open up on that level yet. And maybe one of the other contenders who didn't make it to the show part of things would have been ready. But I think, like, aside from that, like, Tyler's actual time on the show, it does seem like they were treated fairly respectfully. And it's just a situation where they were not at the stage where they could unpack their own, like, it was, truly it was a scenario where they could only solve it themselves, and they were not at the point where they could, like, they had the tools to start solving it, and, like,
and they didn't have the time on the cast, on the set and cast of the Glee Project.
Exactly. It's a very lose-lose scenario.
Yeah.
And I am glad that ultimately it gave Tyler the exposure to become the person that they are today, and, like, have their career and all that stuff. But in hindsight, if I had possessed, okay, I would have done a lot of things different if I was possessing Ryan Murphy. But if I was a person casting for the Glee Project, I would have, like, looked at Tyler and said, they could be great one day, but it would be very, not painful necessarily, but it would be very difficult for them to come on the show. Because out of everyone, I don't think they had a chance.
Yeah.
Anyways. That's me just establishing a baseline of, like, the Tyler situation, because it's something I think about through all of these episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
I can't remember if we got out of the scene where they're doing the dance circle yet, but in the dance circle, Lily Mae does do all of the wedding dances.
Yeah.
And at no point does Zack tell her don't do that, because he's kind of like enthralled by just how much gusto she throws into the boob popping, hair whipping, and twerking.
Yeah.
Also, Danny is, they feel very much like Tyler in that they've had no formal dance training and the moves are going very fast and they feel weird in their body!
Yeah, yeah.
Everything I said about Tyler honestly probably applies to Danny too.
Yeah, Danny has just been maybe less, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, Danny has been less vocal about gender stuff than Tyler has.
Yeah, well, because as far as anyone's concerned, Danny's not the gender contestant. Tyler's the gender contestant.
Yeah.
They don't even mention the fact that Danny is queer on the show. The only reason we know that they're queer is because when they were on America's Got Talent previously, they said, yeah, I got famous because I was featured on the website Lesbians That Look Like Justin Bieber. Also, for Abraham's mentor session, where Sarah's there.
It's Samuel saying, just go with the song, man.
Hey, man, just do it.
Just vibe. It's all fine. And Abraham is like, okay.
That's okay. Here's the other thing that where this episode kind of falls apart. This episode falls apart in many ways. But this theme week kind of falls apart because almost everyone is saying, just vibe with the music, just lose yourself, just be yourself. And Zach is the only person who's saying, Glee is a show where we choreograph dances. I'm going to give you choreography and you need to learn the choreography so you can do the choreography.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even though he's also saying we'll have a dance circle where you show yourself, the rest of it is a choreographed sequences where you need to know these sequences.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he does tell them that they'll have homework and they will need to practice.
Yes, he does.
Here's another failing. How?
Yeah, like, that's something, like, it can be reasonably assumed that, like, if you get practice for the vocal components of the project that week, you have the sheet music, you have the audio track that you can practice to. Are they just expected to remember the moves every single week? Are they getting a videotape of, like, Zach and Brooke doing the choreography?
That's the thing. Like, they especially for this week, they should get a tape that just shows the choreography. Other weeks, I can see them letting it slide because the choreography would not be as intense. And because they'd be doing other stuff during it, it would probably be scenarios where it's like, if someone forgets, they can just do a quick rehearsal on set. Something which, like, feasibly, they probably would not necessarily have had the time for in this music video.
Yeah.
But yeah, on to the recording session.
Yeah, we see a little bit of music time with Nikki. She's like, yeah, I just want all of you to sing well. And she doesn't like Lily Mae's belting and calls her pitchy.
To be fair, this is not me agreeing with Nikki Anders. This is just me happening to have an opinion similar to hers. But Lily Mae and Allie are approaching this song like it is a Broadway standard. And it is a bit much.
That is true.
They're walking in, they're thinking, I'm going to win the Tony for my solo on Party Rock Anthem. And again, I'm like, you don't sing Party Rock Anthem. You just kind of...
That's true.
You really do just kind of feel it.
Yeah.
And also, you just speak normal.
Yeah. And then Nikki, presumably when no one is in the studio recording, Nikki turns to a stone-faced booth techie, who does get a name that I unfortunately did not write down, but she just turns and complains to them for like 5 minutes.
Also, while all this is happening, Eileen and Charlie are having a weenus fight.
They're having a weenus fight, and oh my god, when I tell you that took me back to 2011 and 2012, my god. So, for anyone who has not heard of this before, specifically speaking, the weenus is the loose skin at your elbow. It is spelled W-E-E-N-U-S. And Charlie and Eileen are flirting and, like, poking each other with their elbows. And we get, like, a brief talking head about how, like, Charlie describes Eileen as sexy and with swagger for days. And Eileen is like, I did not come here specifically to find somebody to date. And I'm looking over here, I'm just like, Or no. To quote our friend Jake Mason, ooh!
Yeah, anyways. This is Chilene Watch. we don't have to watch very hard.
Yeah, yeah. There is very little subtext here.
Anyways. Music,
video time.
It's music video time.
They're at an actual house.
Are they? No, I'm pretty sure they're on a set.
If it is a set, it is a very, well, it probably is a set, but it is definitely a whole set that is a house, and it is not just, like, a bunch of separate rooms.
Oh, okay, yeah. But I'm pretty sure they're, like, on a soundstage.
Probably, yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure I saw, like, backdrop stuff behind them in some scenes.
I was not looking that closely, but they're definitely on a set of some kind that is built more like a house than a usual Glee set is.
Right. Okay, so here's the thing about the music video. This music video that is supposed to be about teens dancing at a house party, and you're going to have segments where everyone gets a solo dance, and also everyone's going to have, like, there's going to be three groups of four, and each one gets a choreographed segment as well.
It's kissing.
Here's the thing, but there's kissing, and there's also, like, about 700 other things. Like, there's so much going on in this music video, and, like, I'll get to it after, because let's get more context of this whole shoot situation.
Yeah.
Kissing.
They start off by showing the scenes for Spin the Bottle, and Nelly is like, I am uncomfortable with this! And I noted that they put Mario in sunglasses, I guess so they don't have to worry about having him make eye contact with the camera. But, like, we see little shots of everyone, like, making out, and, like, Mario and Nelly kiss, and they're both good sports about it.
Yeah, it's just a really quick and chaste little smooch, and then they giggle after. It's like friends kissing.
Yeah, and this is also where I noted down that Eric White, he pronounces Mario's name Mario. Mario.
I don't know, I think that's just a personal thing. I think this is an accent thing, maybe.
It's just funny to me.
Okay, here's the thing about the kissing.
Yeah.
So last season, I know we were very angry about the mandatory kissing that Eric was enforcing here. And I guess he is kind of enforcing it here, too.
The surprise kissing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was not a surprise this time, and it does look like everyone were, like, willing to be good sports about things. Mm-hmm. Not to say that everyone from the first season were bad sports about anything, but it seems like all the people in the scenes came into the show saying, and if they're gonna say that I gotta kiss someone, I'm gonna kiss someone.
And if I gotta kiss someone of the same gender, then I'm gonna kiss them.
Oh, that's true. Because Lily Mae and Eileen?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a big deep kiss. Blake and Eileen also have a really deep kiss.
Yeah. and
we cut to the people watching, like, in the green room.
Yeah, and Charlie is just sitting there like a sad baby vulture with, like, his arms, like, you know, like when you tuck your arms, like, in your armpits and you kind of cave your whole chest in. He's just like,
he's verklempt.
Yeah. And everyone's just kind of like,
And I'm pretty sure it's Abraham shouts, are you sucking his soul out?
It was Abraham, yes.
Yeah. Because this kiss goes for a while.
It does. And then, like, after the fact, like, when they're all done with shooting the scene, like, Eileen comes over to Charlie when they're all hanging out in the green room.
And Danny's there, and Danny calls Eileen a slut, but again, this is clearly affectionate.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, Charlie drops a line on Eileen about, like, oh, like, were you sad that I wasn't there? Because I was sad that I wasn't there. And then she kisses him, and he just about skips out of his chair, like, jumping in the air and clicking his heels together. He's yeah. So happy.
It is just as deep and long as the one she gave to Blake.
Uh-huh. And he's like, yippee!
There's also, Eileen gets a confessional after the Blake kiss, where she's mm-hmm. like, sorry, Mom, but look at Blake. And here's the thing. Remember back during Rocky Horror Project? That would be a fascinating show, the Rocky Horror Project.
Oh my god.
Remember back during the Rocky Horror Glee show and kept calling everyone extruded hunk product?
Yeah.
That's Blake. Not only is that Blake, I think Blake is the most extruded of all the hunk products that we're gonna get on Glee.
He is the platonic ideal of white boy.
No, I would say Michael's the platonic... Well, okay. Michael's the platonic ideal of white boy affectionate.
Ah.
Blake's the platonic ideal of, like, meathead.
Ah.
Which is separate from himbo, let's be clear.
Yes.
But really, I'm watching the show, and really all Blake has going for him is that he's beefy.
And that he has prior acting experience on camera.
That's true, but that's another thing that I kind of noticed with this cast, and it kind of ties into the fact that everyone was very much game to, like, suck tongue with everyone. Because except for Mario and Nelly's kiss, it looked like every single kiss was, like, very deep. But anyways. It feels like a lot more of this cast is a lot more Hollywood. like, they don't seem as, like, I know they are amateurs, but they don't feel as amateur as the first season people were. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just a vibe. Maybe it's because they're not highlighting a... No,
maybe it's because they specifically cast four people with more experience, except for, like, Maxwell and Danny.
Yeah. Well, no, because Danny has experience performing, too. It's just just the singing performing.
Yeah.
And I think, like, yeah, because I was about to say maybe it's because they're not highlighting their lack of professionalism. But the thing is, actually, we're going to see they do try to highlight a lack of professionalism. And the kids will counter it with the fact that they do actually have some experience. And I think that's the thing. Like, their attempts to make them look amateur actually make them seem more professional. And it could also be just, like, because this season didn't have as much behind-the-scenes heavy, heavy bullshit going on, that, like, I don't have that devil in my brain saying, like, they were being tortured behind the scenes. Like, it sounds like they had a much more normal experience. And so it just comes off as, like, everything seems a lot more put together because it wasn't literally falling apart. You know, until the last week.
Yeah. But yeah. Back on set. Eric and Robert give Abraham notes about, like, perform less, be more.
What the fuck does that mean?
I know. Which I guess is meaning, like, hey, like, be more present. Don't overthink what you're going to be doing. And Robert is like, I don't like how many takes Abraham needs to get the lines done.
And here's the thing. I know you guys are on, like, a tight time schedule, but I'm pretty sure y'all are shooting digitally. You can take as many takes as you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, shoot, is the memory card getting full up? I guess we'll have to put in another memory card, a thing that takes 2 minutes.
And I also do want to mention that when Danny is doing some of their scenes, they say, these lines feel real, like, swag. And I'm like, oh, honey, a relic of a simpler time when you could say that something was swag. And then we end up cutting to all the producers and all of the actual Glee people. Well, I say actual Glee people, I mean, like Nikki and Zach and Robert watching from behind the camera.
At this point, they're the judges. Yeah. And they are judging them.
Yeah, we see the judges watching from behind the camera as they all try to shoot the big, like, what is supposed to be, like, the final scene of the music video, which is, like, them all doing the dance sequence that Zach taught them in choreography practice. And they don't remember the steps. And Zach says they were horrible. And is like, did you practice? And they're like, we did. This is a lot to remember.
You should have given us a videotape.
Yeah, maybe they should have had a videotape. So at one point, he even says, like, at this point, I think standing still would be better than what you just did. And I'm like, my God.
I mean, it's hyperbole, but Zach, he's clearly trying to, like, get them to understand the gravity. Well, I guess gravity might be too heavy a term, but the stakes.
Yeah.
He's trying to get them to understand that, like, if they were on Glee, this would be bad. This would be very bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, well, I think we just kind of cut to the music video.
Yeah, because they're like, ugh. We managed to scrounge up some usable stuff, and Eric will make it work because he's so good at making music videos. But this was a massive disappointment. Okay, yeah, again, so here, music video. Let me just say, music video seems conceptually weak, because even, like, you can tell that they were just trying to fill a lot of space that would have been filled with dancing with just B-roll, but also, like, they still have people walking down the halls and interacting and just, like, posing for the camera, not so much as dancing, and just sitting around while they're singing their lines. And at a certain point, it's like, how much dancing would have been this music video if they did remember anything?
Yeah.
Also, almost all of the B-roll that they used to fill out segments that would have been dancing is pretty much just Michael sitting on the couch while they dump chips on him, and then he's just kind of writhing covered in chips.
There was also a part at the beginning where it was like everyone walks in the front door of this like set house, and they just pile a bunch of bags of groceries and party supplies and drinks into and on top of Abraham, like into his arms and on top of him, which means that, like, when everyone gets in the door, he's trying to, like, you can tell he's trying to keep it together as he's struggling to carry these, like, 13 separate bringings of food and drink to this party, and there's, like, 7 2-liters that he's having to carry at the same time.
Yeah.
I was like, so, honey.
That's the other thing. Like, if you forget that this is danceability, it is kind of a fun video.
Yeah.
If you didn't know that it was a mess. It was terrible. Just terrible. You'd be like, yeah, this is pretty fun.
Yeah. My actual favorite dance move of the whole time was the fact that when they're doing, like, the dance sequence, air quotes, at the end of the video, like, there's a shot where, like, Charlie, like, actually does, like, a show choir dip for Lily. And it's really cool.
Was it Lily or was it Eileen?
I think it was Lily, but it wouldn't have surprised me if it was Eileen, and I'm not about to go back and check the footage.
I've got the thing open right now. I'm just scrubbing through it.
Ah.
Oh, Nelly also does kiss Michael at some point. And the Mike Callie Sheppers were out in full force for, like, the next 2 years after this thing.
Oh my god.
To be fair, they did also start a band together after.
Oh, so, nice! Like, love to hear it. Would also love to listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can find songs from them somewhere. It's the internet. Hang on, I'm sure we're almost there. No, I miss it. Shit, hang on. Let me go back. I'm trying to think, because there's some other fun dance moments. And then Harper does a shimmy. It was Lily Mae. I will say Eileen and Nelly also have good solo moments, because they do, like, mm-hmm. some splits and, like, dips and swoops up and stuff. Like, they ended up getting real comfortable with their body movements for the dancing part.
Mm-hmm.
So, some of my other notable moments is Tyler. I don't know whether Tyler picked this one or not, but Tyler is the person who gets sad with the lyric, half black, half white domino.
Yeah.
And if Tyler picked it, that's funny. If someone else picked it, I'm just giving a side eye.
Yeah.
Danny gets the line about, where is it? Da, da, da. They do still sing about how the girl is on Abraham's jock.
Oh?
Danny gets the lyric about, where the drank? I gots to know. Tight jeans, tattoo, cause I'm rock and roll. Yeah. And
they show up a tattoo.
I don't think these are Danny's real tattoos. I'm pretty sure they got Danny some temporary tattoos to just slap onto their wrist.
Yeah, yeah. Danny shows off the hottest temporary tattoos.
The lyric they did change was, so the original one is, Eileen sings a segment where the original lyric is, yo, I'm running through these hoes like Drano, which is a horrific mental image, for one thing. So, but they change it to, I'm combing through my hair like Stamos.
Yeah, you know his famous move of combing his hair?
It is John Stamos. Also, there is a part where, like, Eileen pulls Tyler and Michael into the bathroom, and it's like, oh, they're definitely having a three-way in there. It is the true three-gender three-way.
My only other note was that at the end, like, the ending shots of the music video are like, hey, look at all these photos that we took during the shoot of everyone being funny and silly.
Yeah. Oh, my other note about, like, scenes that were, like, B-roll that was probably replacing scenes that were supposed to be dancing is Blake tonguing every girl.
Yikes.
Listen, if it was anyone else, I'd be like, rock on. But Blake Jenner specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the music video.
Yes.
So we go to evaluation time. Eileen, Harper, Blake, Michael, Allie, Charlie, and Mario are all immediately safe. Zach criticizes Nelly and Danny for dancing, and Danny for not being, like, in the party energy like the others were. I think Zach says, like, you are like the kid who's at the party waiting to get picked up by their ride. And I'm like, oh, it's me. Tyler is once again criticized for not getting out of their head. Lily is criticized for using wedding dance moves like the sprinkler and the boob pop, which apparently, I think Zach mentioned that on set during filming, and she did it anyway. I don't remember.
Well, and that's the thing. So at some point she brings up the fact that, like, she started doing it initially and no one actually told her to stop. And then when she did it on set, that's when they told her to stop, and she didn't really have anything else in the chamber for her solo move, so she just kind of kept doing that. And it is what ends up in the video.
Mm-hmm. And Abraham is criticized for being too in his own head during the shoot, and he gets choked up and sad.
Yeah, and we already discussed this anyways. Like, we know what's up with the whole scenario.
Yeah, but then the bottom three end up being Tyler and Danny and Lily. And then, like, the random bit they put in before the elimination songs is a bit about Tyler having an endearing / goat-like / SpongeBob laugh.
Mario says it's like a goat being scorched by a flamethrower and SpongeBob, and Abraham calls it like a troll on helium.
Yes.
And everyone loves it, and we get like a montage of the whole crew laughing the same way that Tyler does.
Yes, and honestly, I really enjoyed the part where it was like, it might have been before they got the reveal about the homework song for the week, because it was like, everyone's sitting together on a couch, and they all just went like, in unison, or at them. And it was just like, oh my god, these are theater kids. But yeah, back to the sad parts of the episode.
Yeah. Did we say the songs that they're singing?
We did not, but Danny's up first singing Landslide.
Yes, by the Chicks.
Fleetwood Mac.
By Fleetwood Mac. Listen, I heard the Chicks version first. I'm always going to associate with them.
Fair. The Chicks are good.
Yeah. And Danny's also really good.
Yeah, Danny is stressed but sings very well.
Yeah, like this is a song built in a lab for them.
Stevie Nicks was like, there's three people who are going to get to sing this song well. It's going to be me, Naya Rivera, and Danny, who's less than I don't remember off the top of my head. And the Chicks. Four performances.
Exactly. Yes, there we go.
Four iconoclastic performances. And then Ryan Murphy's comment to Danny is, you need to sell your talents more. But to the other judges, he says, like, Danny's style is not the pop style of the show.
And he also said that they're talented, but they're not a performer.
Do you want to do the next one?
All right. So Tyler has been assigned Daniel by Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Me, personally, Tanner, I feel like they play it a little safe.
Mm-hmm.
And with the, like, the discussion afterwards, they talk about, again, they were caught up in making a conscious effort to not make a conscious effort.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the rest of my notes, like, I have a whole paragraph, but it is just the whole spiel I did earlier in this episode, yeah. So.
Yeah, and Ryan is still obsessed with Tyler's personal story. He's like, wow, you transed your gender.
Trans, wow.
Yeah. And also, Daniel is much closer to Tyler's current vocal range than some of the other songs they've performed, which is a good choice.
Yeah.
And finally, we have Lily, whose song is Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain. And as she performs, like, she misses some of the vocal runs that are in the music. And at one point, she, like, throws her cardigan off. Like, wow, look. And in her comments afterwards, she mentions that she wants to show girls across America that they can be a big girl and also be the lead ingenue. And I'm like, oh, honey, you haven't watched Glee. You don't know that you're not going to be the lead ingenue. That's Lea Michele. Contractually, that's Lea Michele.
Yeah.
And I didn't write down, like, what necessarily the critiques were about her.
It was her attitude. They were like, you were talking back to people. And I don't know. I can kind of see where they're getting that from, but her defense is that, like, she was brought on because they loved her attitude and her style and her vibe, and, like, basically it boils down to she wasn't getting notes that she was doing something wrong and to stop being herself until kind of the 11th hour. And so she got confused and she wasn't sure which direction she should be taking, because ultimately it boiled down to, I guess this might end up being the theme of the season, is be yourself but not too much.
Mm-hmm. And, like, they also get her to admit that, like, because Ryan Murphy is like, oh, so you don't take critique? You don't take critiques well? And he's like, when is the last time that you argue with someone about a critique? And she's like, oh, my high school choir teacher. And they're like, oh, well. And, like, there's good faith criticism and there's bad faith criticism.
Yeah, also, I think if you're going to be someone who criticizes people, you also need to recognize that maybe they're not talking back, maybe they're trying to clarify what you're critiquing so that they can adjust correctly. And that was definitely the vibe that I was getting from Lily Mae, who's like, she's trying to say, okay, you told me there's something wrong, I'm recognizing there's something wrong. Can you help me, help point me in direction? Can you direct me so that I know where I should be going?
Yeah. Honestly, like, that is something that I also experience at my workplace. Like, hey, you need to improve your performance and lower your error rate. And I'm like, cool, how can I improve my performance and lower my error rate? And my supervisors are like, improve your performance and lower your error rate.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. Like, it just goes back to the same thing of, I can't fix what I'm doing wrong if I don't know I'm doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then Danny goes home.
Yeah, which, here's the thing, again, with the Tyler of it all, I think Tyler should have gone home this episode.
Yeah.
I think they should have recognized that Tyler was not at a point in their life and their transition where they were ready to, like, go through a reality TV show boot camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas Danny, like, I think that's something where they could have worked and brought a more of the performer they were looking for out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would they have won? I don't know, but I think ultimately they would have had a better run on things and a more successful run on things than Tyler did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But time for everyone's favorite segment on the Glee Project episodes. Since they've been gone!
Okay, so let's start with Taryn first.
Yes.
She currently goes by Taryn Michael Mai, and she has a YouTube channel that, to be fair, her YouTube channel is not updated in like a year, but we're not going to hold that against anyone who's trying to be a content creator. Yeah. But for a significant amount of
economy.
Time, for a significant amount of time, she had a YouTube channel where she did like style stuff and makeup tutorials and just like mental health situations and discussing her own stuff and how like to apply that to your life, all that kind of stuff. So general mm-hmm. good vibes, wellness YouTube.
Good.
She is a professional makeup artist, in fact. And last time, so based on the videos that we watched from, let me go back to the Where Are They Now people. So from Lucas Modzelewski and from Amy Lovett, there's our two sources on Where Are They Now. Both of these videos came out 2 and 3 years ago, so they are probably a good chunk out of date at this point, but they are our best source.
Yeah.
And yeah, it sounds like Taryn also ventured back into recording music and releasing some stuff, and it looks like she's doing well.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Mm-hmm. And for Danny, as we have established, they now do they-them pronouns that are more on the leaning to the direction of transmasc.
Yee.
They dated Allie for a few years. Hot.
Yeah. Didn't know that until last night.
Really? I'm sure I've mentioned it to you before.
I did not remember it. Maybe because I didn't know who people on the Glee Project were until this year.
Oh, okay.
Well,
fair
this
enough.
Year for season two, really.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Danny dated Allie from 2012 to 2015.
Oh, nice. And I feel like I've seen stuff about Danny doing, like, music shows or, like...
Yeah, they're still very much, like, I don't know if they are a recording artist, but they are still, like, a coffee house artist and going to shows and writing stuff. And they have also done some acting previously, which is another reason why I say, hey, maybe, like, a screen performer could have come out if you let them on the show longer.
Yeah, because weren't they on, like, one of those, like, first responder shows for a while?
I think that was Bex, who's a different non-binary actor. But I believe Danny Shay played a sheriff in a horror movie.
Oh, okay, that's what I was thinking of.
Yes, it was a thrill to play Deputy Green in the horror movie film Trick, now out on Hulu.
Ah, okay.
That was about a year ago. 47 weeks? No. Yes. 52 weeks in a year, right?
Yes.
Yes, so about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I just always appreciate hearing, you know, about, hey... Everyone is having healthy lives outside of Ryan Murphy's influence.
Oh, also, as of 12 weeks ago, they're blonde and looks pretty good on them.
Oh, nice.
Let me just quickly check Taryn's Instagram. It's private. Good for her.
Yeah, good for her.
And she looks great.
Also
just based
good
off her
for
profile
her.
Picture.
Yeah, nice.
Ooh, she also sells candles now.
Ooh, I bet they're better than Gwyneth Paltrow's candles.
But without Gwyneth Paltrow's good candles, how am I elevate my spiritual vagina?
Why do I feel like Gwyneth Paltrow is someone who would, like, look at the artwork of Georgia O'Keeffe and be like, you know, I just don't see it.
Let me look at the artwork of Georgia O'Keeffe real quick.
It's all cow skulls and very vaginal-looking flowers.
Hmm, Yannick.
Yes.
Because Gwyneth Paltrow wouldn't recognize a vagina that's not full of crystals.
Oh my god.
Anyways, next time on the Glee Project, Lily Mae's competitive edge is rising. Alright, so that'll be next week's episode, but until then, Loser Like Me is still a part of the Corner Podcast Network. We can be heard on your podcast platform of choice, and if we're not there, let us know. We'll work on getting there. We can be found at loserlikemepod.bisky.social on Blue Sky, and through loserlikemepod@gmail.com. We also have our own Discord server and our Tumblr, where links to both are in the episode description. Next week, Vulnerability
2!
Yeah.
We're gonna go record that right now.
Yeah.
But yes, 3, 2, 1.
And that's what you missed on the Glee Project.
Just go ahead and grab a chair and listen now. As we riff the show, Tanner and Christina gonna figure out why we love this show. Better grab your golden stars and slushies, cause you're listening to Loser Like Me. Loser Like Me. Loser Like Me.